Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and our new member of the team, Christopher Cameron.
Thanks very much, Gwyn, and it's great to be sitting here in the technician's chair for the first of three special holiday editions of Word on the Hills. Listeners might have noticed that instead of our usual signature tune, we're featuring some music by the Toronto Children's Chorus today, conducted by Jean Ashworth Bartle and featuring the incomparable Judy Lohman on harp from their 1990 CD, Dancing Day. Back to you, Gwyn.
And now we return to stories submitted by members of Spirit of the Hills. And the first is by Alan Seymour. And Alan is going to read a children's story for us called The Best Sled Ride Ever.
It was just 2 weeks until Christmas. For the 32 kids in the combined grade 3, 4, and 5 class at Cook School, we should have been excited. But we were not. We were grumps. The first snow of winter had not yet arrived. We lived in Creighton Heights, a neighborhood in the country. We lived for outside play, and in winter, skating, tobogganing, pond hockey, and snow forts. Winter with snow? Not fair. Today, Wednesday morning, I glanced at Danny Brown in the grade 4 class beside me. He had dried blood on his sleeve, and on his freckled cheek was a big welt the size of a fist. Ricky. Ricky, the bully from grade 8, was always picking on Danny. From the corner of my eye, I spotted it. Outside, one ginormous snowflake fell slowly, waving at me as it floated back and forth past the windows toward the ground. Then another and another. 10, 20, 50. Psst, Eric, I whispered to my best friend. It's snowing. The quiet of the class changed to whispering, followed by giggles and finger-pointing. Finally, the 3:30 bell sounded, and we raced to Barton's Hill. I had my luge-like racer, Eric his new toboggan, and the twins Jane and Susie, a Canadian Tire flyer. The Browns, Jesse in grade 3 and her brother Danny, only had a sheet of cardboard. While we wore the latest winter fashions for 1962, wool toques, leather hunting caps, knit mitts, flannel-lined coats, the Browns only had hand-me-downs from older brothers and sisters, stained coats with ripped pockets spilling wool batting, and toques and mitts with holes. The Browns lived on Garden Road. The houses there were small, often not well kept. We looked down on the Garden Road kids. Garden Road was poor street. We pushed our sleds back and forth to make tracks. We were ready, but our snowcraft just sank deeper into the wet snow. On Thursday afternoon, it was cold, and it seemed the whole school was on the hill sliding. Jesse and Danny were placing their cardboard on the course as Ricky and his two friends arrived, arms loaded with snowballs. The three laughed at the Browns, calling them names, making sure everyone knew they should go back to Garden Road where they belonged. Jesse and Danny, heads down, quickly departed as the snowballs were hurled at them. On Saturday morning, Alex, Eric, and I each came with a cardboard sheet. Half the kids had cardboard. We went one after another on our wildly wobbling whirligigs sliding in all directions. Then we all locked arms for a massive group slide, ending in a pile of snowsuits, cardboard sheets, and laughter. When we returned to the top, Ricky and friends had arrived. Ricky first taunted Alex, calling him poor. Then he turned to Eric, pointed at him and his cardboard sheet. But where were Danny and Jesse? Then I spotted them, pulling a massive packing case over the fence. Danny and Jesse moved with purpose, ignoring the rude comments from Ricky and his friends. Setting a box on the course, Danny asked for help holding the box to keep it from sliding. No one responded. I looked at Ricky, then Danny. Danny only looked at me. I tugged Eric's sleeves, indicating we should be ready to steady the box. Ricky moved to block our path. I looked up at the big black mop of hair on his pimply face. I didn't blink. I took a deep breath and brushed by him, followed by Eric. Eric and I braced the box as Danny and Jesse got in. Ricky moved onto the sled course below the box, with hands outstretched blocking the box's path. He produced a sneering grin. Jesse and Danny were tense, gripping the box's edge tightly. Alex walked past the two big boys. We need pushers! Susie, Jane, and the three others quickly pushed past the big boys, positioning themselves behind the box. Jesse, her eyes fixed on Ricky, raised her fist and yelled, Let's do it! Eric and I left aside as the pushers shoved. The box sped up quickly, heading right at Ricky. Just as I thought Ricky was going to knock Danny and Jesse over, he jumped away. The riders zoomed down the hill. They were super fast but started to turn, hitting the jump backwards. Up, up, whee! Jesse and Danny threw their arms up in the air. The box rocketed down, way down into the valley. Everyone on the hill had stopped to watch. That was the fastest ride and the furthest distance ever down Barton's Hill. Jesse and Danny were grinning as they marched back up the hilltop. Good going, Jesse, yelled Susie. Great ride, called out Eric. I clapped my hands, the twins and the others did too. The big kids shut up, even Ricky. And as we cheered, Ricky and the two kids left the hill. Jesse then looked at me with a big grin, a grin I had never bothered to see before. Her pigtails were sticking out from her red wool toque. Her leather mitts were wet, her snow pants patched, and her coat was two sizes too big. But it was her smile on that freckled face. That was for me. She pointed to me and then to the unoccupied cardboard box and nodded. I climbed in with her and Eric following. Danny, Jane, and Alex pushed as hard as they could. We moved so fast, we hit the jump right up in the center. Up, up, up. Whee! It was the best ride ever.
Thanks, Alan. And to conclude our program today, visual artist and writer Les Robling is going to tell us about his recollections of Christmases in Wales when he was a child.
Christmas morning and the coal from our shed filled my bedroom fireplace. That one day, when a fire graced my bedroom on the 25th of December, would live in my memory forever. My father's thick grey woolly sock contained my Christmas stocking gifts and had a number of round things that turned out to be an apple, a once-in-a-year orange, and a pomegranate that sent me thinking about what exotic lands such strange fruit came from. Sometimes there were sweets and chocolates, especially now the war was over. Cadbury's, Roundtree's, and Fry's, names that brought smiles to all our faces and chocolate-coated lips. Outside, there was a grey sky and a cold easterly wind. But we had to go out, Sid, my brother and me, didn't we? Just to show what we'd got for Christmas. I'll always remember my first pair of football boots and my football, a red jersey and white shorts. I was Stanley Matthews and Stan Mortensen rolled into one as I dribbled the ball down to a piece of unused land we called the Tump. We'd kicked the ball against the wall of the last terraced house in that part of the street until Mrs. Marnie'd come out, her grey hair done up in about 15 curlers, and shout in her plaintive, mournful way, "Get away from this wall! I'll tell your mam and you! You'll knock all my ornaments down!" Anyway, playing made us hungry, so we'd race home with the ball at our feet for something to eat, a thick slice of bread and butter with jam. Then, as the daylight waned, Mam would say, "You're not going out again now. It's almost time for dinner, and anyway, it's too cold and dark out there." And we were quite happy to stay and read our books as we sat by the smoky fire in the middle room, thinking how lucky we'd been today and how lucky we were that our dad worked in the mine and that he had money to buy us the few treasures we had this Christmas. I noticed, though, that our Mam and Dad never had much, just a gift for each other, something simple like socks or hankies. We never had a real Christmas tree, but some years my dad would walk over the common before Christmas and come back with some kind of a tree, a holly bush like we had this year. Mam would decorate it with homemade decorations, and we thought this must be the most extraordinary, beautiful Christmas tree in the land. It had a big silver star on top made from the shiny silver paper, like the paper the chocolate was wrapped in. Strung across the room from corner to corner were streamers made from coloured crepe paper. They criss-crossed in the middle and added a festive touch. The smells coming from the kitchen made my taste buds tingle with the expectation of the best dinner of the year. Mam always tried to make this meal the most exceptional one, and her thyme and parsley stuffing was her specialty. The first thing we did was pull the Christmas crackers and then place those flimsy, funny paper hats on our heads and just laugh for minutes like fools, amused at our dad, the miner, wearing a floppy, triangular pink hat. The meat had been cut, and our Mam placed the plates in front of us. Chicken, stuffing, sprouts, carrots and potatoes, all covered with a rich brown gravy. A meal fit for the finest table in the nation. There wasn't much talking, as we were all intent on eating our food before it got cold. After we'd finish, Mam would bring out the pudding and the white sauce. Dad had given Mam some shiny sixpences to put in the pudding when she made it months ago, so he warned us, "Now watch out for the money, so that you don't crack your tooth or swallow a sixpence." We'd nod our heads in response, but couldn't wait to get to the pudding. Finding a sixpence in the spoonful just shoveled into my mouth was as good as finding buried treasure, and I delightedly showed it to everyone. It sparkled and shone just like a nugget. "Look," I yelled, "I've got one." After supper, even though we were stuffed with food, we'd play games until the inevitable quarrelling started, and our Mam would say, "Righto, that's it. Now off to bed with you. Put those games away, and you can play again tomorrow." and secretly I was glad that Mam had laid the law down, because I was tired and happy to go up the 15 dark, lino-covered steps to my bed, even though I knew the fire had long expired, the sheets would be cold, and the lino would still be cold on Boxing Day.
Thank you, Les.
Thank you.
Well, that's what we have for you today, listeners. So many thanks to all our readers for coming in today and sharing their Christmas stories and song. Felicity, Chris, and I send you our very best wishes for a happy holiday and a peaceful new year. If you'd like to connect with us here at the program, please visit us at our website, wordonthehills.com. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio. Tomorrow shall be